Welcome to the Jet Setter Show, where we explore lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Enjoy and learn from a variety of experts on topics ranging from upscale travel at wholesale prices to retiring overseas, to global real estate and business opportunities, to tax havens and expatriate opportunities. You'll get great ideas on unique cultures, causes, and cruise vacations. Whether you're wealthy or just want to live a wealthy lifestyle, the Jet Setter Show is for you. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Jet Setter Show. This is Jason Hartman, your host, where we explore lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. I think you'll enjoy the interview we have for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds here on the Jet Setter Show.
Now's your opportunity to get the Financial Freedom Report. The Financial Freedom Report provides financial self-defense in uncertain times, and it's your source for innovative, forward-thinking investment property strategies and advice. Get your newsletter subscription today. You get a digital download and even more. The price, only $197. Go to jasonhartman.com to get yours today.
My pleasure to welcome Josh Van Dyke to the show. He is an investment advisor with Bateman Financial, and they are located in a place you have all heard of, and that is the Cayman Islands. Today we'll talk about life in the Cayman Islands, where there are nearly 600 banks and trust companies in Grand Cayman, including 43 of the world's 50 largest banks. And because of this large financial presence on the island, banking, investments, and insurance companies drive the economy of this gorgeous place. We'll talk about investing globally, offshore asset protection, and the opportunities and risks available with all of this, as well as moving your IRA offshore. Josh, welcome. How are you?
Oh, I'm terrific. Thank you for having me on the show, Jason.
My pleasure. So this whole area is under scrutiny. The government is attacking it. The U.S. government, I mean, probably other governments too. They don't want people to be doing business offshore. They want them to make sure they're paying their taxes and not doing any funny business. And the Cayman Islands, I mean, you know, it's got quite a reputation. What do you say about all that stuff?
Things change, I would say. We're not in the late 90s anymore. You know, for our firm, we accept Americans, but we accept them on a, you know, W-9 reporting basis, right? You know, it's not something we're looking for a tax haven standpoint for our clients. It's more for, a better investment perspective as well as some asset protection.
So the only real experience I have is I went to Belize last year, and I heard there was some change in the law. One of my associates told me that, and I went down there, and before I did that, I opened up a bank account on paper, never funded the account. And then I went down there, and I was thinking I'd fund the account and just, you know, diversify a little bit, think internationally. I'm a very international person. I've visited 64 countries, and I'm a big traveler and so forth. I got to tell you, Josh, I went down there, I visited the bank in person, and I just was not that comfortable giving them my money, so I never funded the account. What do you say about stuff like that? How does someone know? I mean, I assume your accounts aren't FDIC insured, not that that is really good protection either. I mean, if Susie Orman's endorsing that, I'm not impressed. So I hear her radio commercials.
Well, you know, I'd say Grand Cayman is much different and much more developed and much more transparent than Belize. If you came to Grand Cayman, you'd see, you know, you're working with very professional, very well-educated expats from, you know, U.S., Canada, Australia, the U.K. And, you know, I think the Cayman banks are much more capitalized and much better capitalized than maybe a Belize bank. They're much larger. And, you know, as far as Grand Cayman is concerned, you know, it is a huge, huge banking and investment hub. I believe it's the sixth largest banking hub in the world as far as assets under management. So you may feel a different experience if you were in Grand Cayman than Belize.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Belize was pretty primitive, I thought. How did Grand Cayman come to be this sort of banking capital? I mean, how did it get that way? Did they just decide, did wealthy people come there and just decide they wanted financial privacy and they wanted it to be out of reach of various westernized governments? What was their thinking? What happened?
I think initially it's a couple different things. One is, it is a tax neutral jurisdiction, right? So there is no income tax, sales tax, corporate tax, property tax. And so it doesn't mean that people don't declare taxes on, investments back home, but, the reality is that this is a tax neutral district, so there's no risk of double taxation. And I think that's one of the big attractions. And it's also it's a lovely place to come visit. So people like doing business here where it's, pretty and warm.
And what does someone do? Do they just open a savings account or a checking account or a brokerage account? And do they set up an entity to do it, like an offshore corporation or some sort of LLC, or is it just a bank account in their name?
People can set up a bank account in their name. I guess it depends on their objective. For most clients, they're going to have an account in the name of a corporation, an international corporation, or in the name of a, insurance policy. And most people don't have the account in their name, more for the asset protection reason, and also grants them a little bit of privacy. For what, privacy people have left. For the most part, our clients, most of them have accounts that are in, a corporate name or in the name of an insurance policy.
And the motivations for doing this are what? I mean, what are the advantages to the client for going offshore?
I'd say, one of the first and foremost is their asset protection.
In what way?
Well, let's say I am a person in the U.S. and all my assets are just in my name or in the name maybe of a U.S. LLC, and something happens, some event happens. It could be something as simple as someone falling on my property, or I hit somebody in their blind, and they were in the blind side, and so I didn't see them. If that person says, whatever the case may be, that person says, I'm going to sue you, and they bring the case, and a judge has full discretion over what they want to do. They can grant that person whatever they want of your assets. And a lot of judges as well now are piercing the corporate veil. Even though the assets weren't in your name and they're in the name of your corporation, a lot of times they'll say, well, we're going to pierce the corporate veil and still release those assets. So oftentimes what happens is people will have a trust or a corporation or things of that nature, some sort of structure or foundation. And they'll invest those assets offshore because what a U.S. judge says in America doesn't necessarily have the same effect in a different legal jurisdiction. We have our own judges and our own, legal system here. And so oftentimes what happens is a person will go to an attorney, say, I want to sue this person, whether the grounds are fair or not, whether they have a case or not. Attorneys in America will take on the case and you might be sitting there going, well, this person, gosh, they're suing me and I didn't do anything wrong. But you still now have to hire legal counsel and spend that money to defend yourself. Even if, the case is thrown out, you still have a big legal bill. But I think a lot of people want it to where, their assets are much more challenging to get at. And so they move them offshore and they're not maybe directly in their name. And they go ahead and this person goes to an attorney and says, hey, I want to sue this person. I don't really have a case, but you'll probably take it on and, maybe we can win. And the attorney looks up this person's assets and says, well, they don't have a ton of assets. Maybe they do have assets, but they're just hard to see. Or maybe the attorney can see that some of those assets have moved offshore and knows those are going to be much more challenging to get at. They're going to have to hire legal counsel in the Caymans. They're going to have to put up, money to be able to bring the case to fruition. And so makes it much more challenging. A lot of times an attorney won't say, yeah, this is going to be really challenging to get at and might take too long. So I'm not going to take on the case.
So one of the big paradigms of asset protection is, or maybe it's not a paradigm, it's a paradox, actually, that's a better word, is that if you want to protect your assets, you need to move them to some extent out of your control and out of your name. And that presents two new challenges. One challenge is, of course, when they're out of your control or out of your name, you have some risk associated with that. If you have a trust or a custodian or trustee or some other person or entity exerting some control over them. And then the other issue comes, I guess, with how do you enjoy them. So for example, if you have this money and it's in this good asset protection program, how do you spend it? How do you use it on your lifestyle? So those are two questions that I hear people in your business present, two challenges. Can you address those?
Yeah, definitely. You know, there is varying degrees of control that you can release on your money. I mean, you can have a corporation where you are the president, and even though the corporation is it's not in your name, you have control of the corporation. You know, if you have a trust or you have different directors, yeah, you are releasing some control, and that should grant you some more protection. So there is a trust factor there, and I think, you know, it is valuable if you're going to set up an entity, as a trust and, you know, have a trustee over it, that you go with a very well-respected, well-established company to do that through. Not everybody does that. Like I said, there's different levels of which you can release your control over things, and some people want a lot of control. As far as, you know, spending the money and having it towards your lifestyle, again, you know, we're very transparent, so we are reporting. It's not something that someone's hiding all the money so they don't pay taxes on it. They're moving the money to create some protection for their assets. Okay, so when someone wants money, we can still release that to them through the proper way so that they can use it and spend it on whatever they want, whether they want to buy a vacation home or whether they're looking to purchase a new car or use it on, you know, different expenses, college kids' tuition or things of that nature.
And so if the asset shows up on one's tax return, then if they're in a lawsuit, wouldn't that tax return become part of that lawsuit and the opposing counsel would see the asset there? What would they do then? I mean, you know, you say you're reporting, and I think everybody listening wants to report. The U.S. requires
Sure.
that people report all worldwide income, I believe. So these are areas where you can get in danger if you don't do it right. So you want to keep everything above board and legal. But doesn't the other side see the asset there?
You know, that's why, you know, we work with several different attorneys. We work with several different trust companies, and they can structure things and help the client understand what it is that they're getting into, how to release funds effectively. You know, our main job at Bateman Financial is the investing side. And so we go ahead and we can put clients in touch with good people to help them understand that process. But our process is more to help grow the assets.
So you recommend attorneys then to set up the proper structure and so forth?
Definitely.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, for example, in terms of spending the money, I mean, do people tie credit cards or debit cards to their accounts so that they can use those cards all over the world and buy things with them, and then it just makes a withdrawal from the account when they use them?
That's a possibility. It's not something that we do often. You know, I'd say most clients come to us looking to grow the assets. And when they want money, we simply wire it to them. I think it's much more transparent than trying to have a debit card. If someone wants a debit card or a credit card, we can set them up with a bank account, you know, at a bank that we have a relationship with. And, you know, they can have a transactional business at a bank account. We're more on the investing side.
Well, let's talk about the investing side. What do people invest in globally? I mean, why can't they just do that from the U.S., for example?
Sure. You know, a lot of firms in the U.S. don't have access to a lot of these international products. There's a lot of products that are strictly created just for offshore products. And so, you know, a lot of these funds, whether they're hedge funds or mutual funds or fund-to-funds, they take on a broader array of investments. And, you know, whether that be, you know, just what they're investing in or where they're investing the money. And so I think a lot of clients are looking for things that are a little bit more alternative and maybe uncorrelated to traditional investments.
And so what kind of things are you talking about? So an international investor working with your firm, where can they invest that they can't invest in the U.S.? I mean, certain hedge funds, and what's the differences? I mean, why don't these funds do business in the States? I assume you're going to say too much regulation.
You got it. Most funds don't do business in the States or offer it in the States simply because of the fact that it's a pain. You know, the amount of regulation and the amount of reporting that they have to do, you know, just becomes an added expense that may not be worthwhile to them. But, you know, we run a fund here. It's called the Glenmore Natural Resource Fund and invests in a lot of different Canadian, Australian, European and African resource companies. And that's done incredibly well, and clients really like that. They're getting exposure to a lot of different resource markets in oil and gas and mining, and they're getting exposure all over the world through one fund.
Has that fund done better than some of the natural resource funds in the States, for example?
Yeah, it's done much better, in my opinion. So, you know, as far as, you know, this past year was up close to 60%.
That's so, pretty awesome.
That's pretty good.
No question about it.
Yeah. No one was complaining about that.
What kind of fees does someone have when they do business with a firm like yours?
Our firm is more of a commission-based firm, so it depends on what the client is looking to do. If they are looking to just trade on their own, well, that's going to be dependent on what they're trading, whether they're trading stocks or bonds or options or futures, and what markets they're trading. Are they trading U.S. or Canadian or Australian? If they're looking to just have us manage the assets, we typically just do a 1% asset management fee, where we go ahead and manage the assets, pick different funds based on their risk tolerance, and put together a nice diversified portfolio for the client.
So IRA investing, you know, one of the fears in the U.S. is that the IRAs and the retirement accounts might be nationalized the way they were in Argentina as the U.S. government becomes more and more insolvent and more hungry for money. People have talked about how they might engineer some sort of a crisis, a false flag, if you will, and, you know, or maybe one will just happen and the government will step in with their usual speech of how we need to protect everybody and, you know, so we better take over the retirement accounts. And, you know, we've done such a good job with Social Security, so, you know, let's do what they did in Argentina and nationalize everybody's IRA and 401k. There's some movement certainly for self-directed IRAs in the U.S., and we recommend that. My investment company recommends that, where people self-direct them. My own plan self-directed. I invest in income properties. I invest in notes and trust deeds. And those things, unlike the paper assets in the stock market, are much more fragmented, hard to get a hold of, hard to nationalize. But other people are thinking, you know, I should take this stuff offshore. Why would someone do that, and what's involved in it?
Yeah, I agree. There's a huge growing trend of people moving IRA assets offshore. A lot of people are just worried about the government putting restrictions on what they can buy or mandating a certain amount going into treasuries or, a number of things, just like you said. So, you know, we work with a self-directed IRA company for people if they want to roll over their IRA into a self-directed IRA. And how we typically do it is that self-directed IRA owns a LLC or a company, and we open the account in the name of that LLC or company. And then the only asset of the IRA is the company. Now, all the IRA assets that they've accumulated, which can be invested in properties, they can be invested in different funds, they could be invested in gold or silver, it can be invested in stocks or bonds or options, whatever the case may be. You know, those things are, things that they can do with us or through us, and they can have the assets offshore. And I think there's a lot of people that don't even know that they can do that, that they can have their IRA or their old 401k assets offshore.
And so what's involved in doing that?
Well, typically, if a client contacts me, I can walk them through the process. Again, we work with a very large company. In fact, I believe it's the largest for self-directed IRAs. And I can introduce them to a person that I work with there. They roll over their traditional or their Roth IRA from wherever it's sitting currently at Schwab or E-Trade into a self-directed IRA. And we link that IRA with a company. We open the account in the name of that company, and the client can make investments through that company. Typically, the IRA custodian will wire us the capital. And then once they are set up here, we can help give them direction on what they'd like to invest in based on their tolerance.
Okay. I guess maybe my last broad question for you, Josh, is comparing Cayman Islands to other quote-unquote havens, okay? There are the Cook Islands, the Isle of Man, Belize. All around the world, there are various places people hear of, and they're written about in books, and everybody's promoting sort of a different thing. When it comes to international investing, asset protections, the Bahamas certainly have been one of them. Why the Caymans?
Well, I think you're just dealing with a level of sophistication. Again, I think a lot of the, you know, people that live here and work here, it's a very experienced community. where you're getting people that are well-educated, well-traveled, and you know they can speak your English language perfectly, unlike you know maybe other areas. And you know another nice beautiful thing is you know we're an hour and 10 minute flight from Miami, so we're an easy place to come. It's people that sometimes people like to come visit their money, right? Some people like to you know come down and meet us before they get established. So it really depends on the client, but you know Grand Cayman is a very well established place with very good infrastructure, good telephone lines, good internet, good roads, and smart people. And I think that attracts a lot of really, really successful people to invest here. And it attracts a lot of good people that want to live and work here.
In terms of living there, just out of curiosity, I mean, you know, like I mentioned before, I was just not impressed with Belize. And so many people are selling that as a place to invest in real estate. And I don't think that's an investment. Those are just second homes. They don't qualify as investments at all, in my opinion. But also, it was pretty primitive. I mean, internet was slow. Skype wasn't available. They blocked Skype, the phone company.
Yeah, I've heard that.
So that's a real hassle. I mean, just something like that alone. Dirt roads, bumpy, just very primitive. I mean, not much infrastructure. Shopping, retail was terrible. Not much of an economy there either. Just the hardwoods, and I don't mean to disparage Belize. It's a beautiful place, but drug trafficking, you know. What is the real estate cost there? I mean, you moved from Chicago. You went to school in Michigan. Maybe tell us your story and talk a little bit about the lifestyle and the real estate as well. It's just kind of interesting.
Sure. You know, if I were to compare Cayman, you know, we have very good infrastructure. We're very developed, very high standard of living. I think the average income of a person in Cayman that lives here year-round is over $60,000 a year, which is a very high standard of living. There's no shanty towns. You know, I've noticed in different areas, different islands in the Caribbean, you go stay at this gorgeous resort, Jason, and it's amazing. You're on this beautiful beach, and then you take a little bike ride off the resort, or you walk
it's
off the
abject
resort.
Abject poverty, yeah.
And it's amazing. I mean, you have kids running around naked in a little shanty town with little houses that are made out of leftover stuff from a hurricane.
Yeah,
okay.
It's so sad, really it is.
It's really tough. And you just don't see that in Cayman. And you have very low crime. And you have a diversified economy because we have a lot of money that comes in from tourism and then obviously a lot of money that comes in from the financial side of things.
It's got to be expensive to live there, though. I mean, you know, last time I visited any Caribbean island, it was Bermuda. And Bermuda's expensive. I mean, that is not an inexpensive place to live. I assume the Caymans are expensive as well, especially because the attraction of the banking and the infrastructure and the sophistication.
Sure. I would definitely say that Cayman isn't cheap. It is less expensive than Bermuda, from my understanding, or at least my understanding as of House Hunters International.
Okay. Well, what? Give us an example. I mean, you know.
Well, you know, like I said, I grew up in Michigan, so you know, Michigan is going to be very, very, in my opinion, lower cost of living, heart of the Midwest. But in Chicago, I lived downtown Chicago and had a condo downtown Chicago, and I would compare prices to bigger city prices, similar to that of downtown Chicago, not quite as expensive as a New York or San Francisco, but definitely you want a condo, it's going to probably be closer to that $400,000 to $500,000 range, and a house is obviously going to be more than that, right?
And so rentals as well, that's the on the purchase side, you know, in terms of renting something, I mean, do you have a thriving rental market there, or is it largely an ownership market?
Definitely. I would say there's a huge rental market, and a lot of the people that own property here and rent it out don't live here. For people, I think, that live here and, you know, there is no income tax, I would say if you compare the prices of real estate and you live here and you're not necessarily paying taxes in comparison to what you would be paying in a large city in America, you're much better off. I would say it's, you know, salaries are very competitive here, and, you know, the fact that the taxes are very minimal. Some of them are obviously clearly built in as a duty, but you know, no income tax, no sales tax, no property tax. So if you actually own a property here and you bought it, there is no property tax.
What's the population there?
Population is kind of an interesting one because it's 55,000, of which I'd say about 25,000 or so are expats. And
are those American expats or all over the world? Probably all over the world.
Mainly not Americans, surprisingly.
European?
Well, yeah, most expats, I would say, come from the UK, Canada, Australia, South Africa, and then America, as far as your expats that are working in the financial industry. And, you know, it's basically, you know, people that native language is English, right? And so they move here. As far as people that live here, I mean, you have a, you know, like I said, a well-educated, very friendly, and I would say very adventurous feel and vibe of the people that live here. And, you know, everybody that's moved here has been to the point where they moved and they didn't know anybody. So when people move here, I think that the community is very opening and welcoming to you.
That's good. Bateman Financial is the company, and it's batemanfinancial.com. Anything else you want to tell us about this whole area of thinking and opportunity?
Well, you know, I just think that, you know, for people that want to, you know, get exposure to different investments that they might not have in the U.S. Available to them, and people that would like to maybe get some asset protection, I think that, you know, we're a very, very good firm with, you know, good people. And in fact, recently we've even added a, you know, toll-free number for U.S. clients to make it easy and inexpensive for them to get in touch with us.
And your minimum account is $100,000, right?
That's correct.
Just thought people should know that as well. Okay, great. Well, Josh Van Dyke, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, I appreciate it, Jason.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn about investing in and managing income properties for college students, there's a show for that. If you want to learn how to get noticed online and in social media, there's a show for that. If you want to know how to save on life's largest expense, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know about America's crime of the century, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.